Good evening, and welcome to this episode of the Full Press Raiders Podcast. Well, after a busy week, we have signings, trades, much speculation. We're going to jump right to it. You know him. He is one of the sharpest minds on social media, our guy Ryan Holmes. Good evening, Ryan. How are you?
I'm doing good. Thanks for having me on.
Now, when we look at the scope of what the Raiders did, I think we'll start with the trades. Did you expect for them to, for lack of a better term, ship away 60% of their offensive line?
I did not. I thought there was a chance they could turn over maybe two of the starters, maybe three at top, which is going to be three now because Incognito's coming back, but I figured he would be one of the ones. I had no idea they were looking to move on from Rodney Hudson. His play has fallen off, obviously, last year compared to the prior seasons, but he's still an elite pass blocker. But Gruden obviously wants to run the ball, and I think Gruden knows the results they got with all the money they spent, that they had the most money tied into the offensive line of any team in the league last year with subpar results. I don't think they had a blocker that was in the top 10 in a pass blocking win rate or run blocking win rate. So I thought it was Jackson or Brown. I didn't think it would be both. And then I obviously, like I said, I didn't think it would be Hudson. But all is not lost. Incognito, if he can stay healthy, is a good guard still. Denzel Good proved his worth last year. You still have Simpson in a swing role. They're just going to have to figure out that right tackle spot. I'm not too worried at center. I know Rodney Hudson is a potential Hall of Famer, and a lot of Raider fans are up in arms. But $11 million is a lot of money to spend on the position when you probably can't name the starting center on 75% of the playoff teams last year. So I'd much rather be secure at the tackle spot than I would spend $11 million on the center.
Now, when you looked at what the Raiders received back for those three players, of the three, which one were you most surprised they got the most out of, and which was the most surprised you got the least out of trade-wise?
I was surprised they got a fifth rounder for Gabe Jackson at $9.6 million. I didn't think anyone was going to trade for that with the surplus of guards that were on the market. So that was surprising because I know they tried to move him last year before the draft and they just didn't get the offers they wanted. And then I'm going to say Trent Brown. I was surprised they only got a fifth for him. I know he's hurt, but when he's healthy, he's probably one of the top two or three right tackles in the game, if not the best. So the fact that they were able to get fifth round pick for both those guys was both surprising and the third rounder for Hudson doesn't surprise me. He's a good player. He's still one of the top five centers in all of football. So the fact they were able to get a third rounder for him, it was more surprising the timing that it was announced he was going to be released and the next day we get a third rounder for him. So, but I would say the other two were more surprising than what they got for Hudson.
Now, skeptics are going to say that now with a rebuilt or refurbished offensive line that Derek Carr has another built-in excuse. Do you buy that rationale, or do you think that after 8 years, he's all out of reasoning and all out of excuses?
That's a tough question. I think that there is a built-in excuse now if the offensive line is subpar next year. I don't think he deserves one. Like you said, year eight, the line will be at least league average. You know, Tom Cable's going to get he's going to get a lot of mileage out of Incognito if he can stay healthy. You still have Colton Miller, who's a top 10 left tackle in the league right now. Denzel Good's at least an average starting guard. The center position is going to be a question mark, but you know, Andre James, a combination of him and Nick Martin. Nick Martin's serviceable. It's good. Obviously, he's not Rodney Hudson, but it's not going to be a huge downgrade at the center position. So if they can fill the right tackle spot, which it looks like at this point they're going to go in the draft to do that. There's not a lot left on the market, and there's going to be three or four guys sitting there right at 17 in the first round. And I saw they brought in Elijah Wilkerson for a visit. He's going to fit more of that if they bring him in. He's not a starting right tackle. Raider fans are going to lose their minds if they sign him. He's probably there more to compete as the backup right tackle with Brandon Parker. He's only 26 years old. He has, you know, 25, 26 starts under his belt. So he's a good guy to have on the bench. But I think they're going to run at least a league average offensive line. The issue is going to be if they're below average, it will be an excuse, and then Raider fans will wonder why they paid Kenyon Drake, a backup running back, what they did when they should have kept some guys on the offensive line. But we've talked about it on this podcast for the entire season. If the defense was going to get better, they had to take the resources out of the offensive line.
And that's what people don't understand. Like, people it's because the cap is now actually reduced, and plus it was a lot of money in the offensive line, and I will give McKenzie credit, I will give even Mayock credit. They tried to give Derek Carr the tools to succeed in ample blocking. They did what they could do, and you can't fault them for trying to build on the offensive line. It didn't pay off. Now, when we come back from break, I want to discuss offensive line, or so much tackles that you want to see man the right side via the draft. You are listening to the Full Press Raiders podcast on the FPC Radio Network. We are back with the Full Press Raiders podcast. Terrence Biggs, Ryan Holmes. Ryan, now, when you look at the first round, and for actually first couple of rounds, there are anywhere between like seven possible offensive tackles that could slide in. I know you said you're a big Tevin Jenkins fan. Do you think that there's a possibility, say, if Rashawn Slater, Christian Darrisaw aren't there at 17, that they would trade down for Jenkins, or would they try to slide him into that 17th spot?
I think if you want Jenkins, you have to take him at 17. There's going to be teams right behind them or willing to move up to get him. And at that point, he's the best right tackle in the draft as far as run blocking, size, ability to move, and pass block. The other guys fit more on the left side, so you'd be taking a left tackle and trying to move him over. And we've kind of seen that hasn't been great with Robert Gallery and maybe a couple other guys the Raiders have taken. So I would, if they want right tackle and they want to go in, I would focus in on him, probably Jenkins, or in the second round, hopefully a Jalen Mayfield out of Michigan, a guy who's played the right side primarily. I think Slater is going to be off the board by the time the Raiders pick. There's a good chance Darrisaw is as well. But if he is, that's going to be a tough decision. If Darrisaw is sitting there at 17 and you have Jenkins, I would probably lean towards Darrisaw just because that's insurance. In case something happens with Colton Miller, you could just flip him over to the left side and be fine. I don't think you have that versatility with Jenkins where if something happened to Colton Miller that you could move the guy over. Obviously, the ability to do that is important. But I would rank them Darrisaw, Jenkins, and then probably Mayfield as a pure right tackle.
Jalen Mayfield is a guy that is kind of interesting to me because, yes, he went to Michigan and they didn't have a great season, but in the last couple of years, he has faced a bunch of pass rushers from Anthony Jennings to Khalid Kareem, all the Notre Dame guys, and Shaka Tony at Penn State, and he has the athleticism that I would want at the right tackle, but Jenkins, like you said, he is a plug-and-play, ready right now. You won't have to worry about him. Plus, he brings a snap-to-whistle, going-to-fight-you type of mentality that the Raiders need. Honestly, they need it. They need to establish that. Another name I want to kind of is Dylan Raduns from North Dakota State. I know that he's a left tackle, but he could play some right, but I don't see the Raiders trying to wait until the second round to grab a offensive tackle. But further down, I know that, like you have mentioned, Nick Martin and you mentioned Andre James as the guys who are going to compete at center. There's a guy, local to me, from Whitewater, and Quinn Miners. That's a guy that he just has that Gruden, I don't know, he just strikes me as like a Gruden guy. Like, small school, but just kind of that, I hate to use the word gritty, but he's a Gruden grit guy, and if he is further down in the draft somewhere, I can see the Raiders possibly taking a flyer, but that is, you know, they have so much or so many other holes to kind of work with. Now, I want to get to some of the other signings. Now, we mentioned John Brown. I feel as though he's redundant to Henry Ruggs, because we had talked about this for the longest time, that if Nelson Aguilar didn't resign, that we wanted, or the hope was that Ruggs would take his routes and those snaps. Now you have John Brown, who is a carbon copy. What becomes of Ruggs with Brown?
This is an interesting sign, because we wanted the big X receiver that was going to play outside and be a red zone threat. Obviously, John Brown is not that guy. He's going to play the X for the Raiders, but he's more of a speed guy. He's basically a better version of Nelson Aguilar. He's had better production in his career. He's a 4-3 guy. He's got good hands. He made a great catch that was ruled almost a touchdown, but got overturned against the Raiders when he was in double coverage. So I think it's a good signing for the value. At $3.5 million or whatever he got, you add that piece to your offense. But I don't think it helps him in the red zone. What I think is going to happen is you're going to see John Brown's going to play outside X. And then I think what you're going to see is on first and second down, Henry Ruggs is probably going to be in the slot. And he's going to be taking snaps away from Hunter Renfrow. And Renfrow is going to go into just basically a punt return slash third down guy. So on third down, they're going to bring him in to try to move the chains. But I think what you're going to see on the field a lot is Edwards outside with Brown, and they're going to put Ruggs in the slot and try to get him to run some over routes, crossing routes, and get him matched up in zone coverage against linebackers and safeties and just see if he can win with speed. So that's where kind of I'm envisioning this offense going, because they still lack that outside X receiver. And I'd love if they would use Darren Waller in the red zone at that position, and then it's solved. Then you run slants and fade to Darren Waller. It's not an issue. You have speed guys between the 20s. So it'll be really interesting. Clearly, Gruden has an idea of what he wants this offense to look like by adding Kenyon Drake and John Brown and using that resource as basically almost $7 million in cap room between the two guys. So it's going to be interesting. That would be my first initial thought, is Henry Ruggs is going to get a lot more slots inside.
When I think of, you know, when the Raiders drafted Henry Ruggs, I'm like, I was hoping or thinking that he would be a number one, but then being in a slot. But then also do remember, this is a strange parallel, but Doug Baldwin from the Seahawks, when he was their number one receiver, you would see him a lot in a slot too. And he would operate just not with speed, but he would operate with like route technique and be able to, you know, win with quickness. And that's how he caught a lot of his passes from the slot and from out. So I'm hoping, like you mentioned, that Ruggs will be able to emulate that. Now, you mentioned Kenyon Drake. Was it a need?
Yeah, we've talked about backup running back being a need, and I think for $3 million this year, I have no issues with it. It's next year when you're staring at an $8 million cap it for a backup running back that's going to be the problem. Hopefully he has a good year, and then that's an immediate restructure if they want to keep him on the roster. They can't cut him. You're not taking an $8 million cap it to move on from him. So hopefully he's willing to restructure that deal next year, and then it becomes a moot point. But they've mentioned using him as a wide receiver, kind of in a Lynn Bowden Jr. role. They envision the Joker. I don't know where you're going to put him on the field. You're not going to line him up outside. He's not going to line up in the slot. You're going to be taking snaps away from Edward Ruggs or Renfrow to do that. So there might be certain situations where he's on the field with Jacobs, but I think he's going to spend a lot of his time splitting carries to keep Jacobs fresh later in games. And then even, you know, they were rotating last year. Booker was playing every third series, no matter what. He was in on the third series, so you're going to see a little bit of that. But it's interesting because they moved on from a lot of those offensive linemen, and I immediately was waiting for the defensive signings, and it was literally Incognito, good, Derek Carrier, John Brown, Kenyon Drake, and it's like, okay, where are the defensive players? They haven't really dug in there yet other than a couple of defensive linemen. They haven't added anybody to the secondary. And they re-signed Nick Morrow, who I thought, that's another luxury. He doesn't really fit in this defense with Littleton and Kwiatkowski. So it'll be interesting. And re-signed Hankins, who was already here. So they really haven't made a splash defensively outside of Ngakoue. The other guys are role players.
Now, we talked about Yannick Ngakoue, but Solomon Thomas and Quentin Jefferson. Jefferson has that familiarity with Gus Bradley's defense in Seattle. Solomon Thomas is the interesting one, where even though he played a lot at end, he's going to play, from what people have said, as a three tech. This is a guy who was the number two pick in the draft. He was top five draft, like, top five draftee. Where do you think he fits in? How do you see his role increasing or decreasing as the year goes on?
This is another guy where they're basically shooting for upside, former first-round pick. It's the Raider way. John Gruden's bringing that back. I fully expect Quentin Jefferson to start at the three technique. He's a better player than Solomon Thomas. Solomon Thomas is an undersized guy to move inside. He's 280 pounds. So a lot of Raider fans are immediately going to think, oh, this guy's a pass rusher. His strength is actually run stopping. So it's going to be interesting to see where his snaps are coming from. If they bring him in, it's going to be more, I think, where they're going to run games and stunts, where he's got the movement skills to run those type of games with other linemen. I think that most of his sack production, what little there has been on play action, misdirection plays, where he beats a down block. You don't see him on film beating a guy one-on-one on the outside or the inside. And once the offensive linemen get their hands on him, he doesn't show any counter moves as a pass rusher. So to think that this guy's going to come in, slide into the three technique on third down, get you 6 to 8 sacks, I just don't see that happening. The interesting player work that this all is going to affect, and Raider fans are going to hate this, is Maurice Hurst. I don't think Maurice Hurst is going to be on this roster when the season starts, if you look across the defensive line, because they're going to keep four interior players. Hankins is on the roster. Thomas is going to be on the roster. Jefferson's going to be on the roster. I would put David Irving on the roster over Maurice Hurst at this point. He fits more of the body type that Gus Bradley's looking for. He's a longer guy, 290 pounds. He gives you a little bit pass rush, a little bit run blocking. The only role Maurice Hurst has on this defense is a third down pass rushing specialist, but then they're going to kick Cleveland Farrell inside in a lot of those situations. So if they could move Hurst for like a fifth or sixth round pick, I think they'd do it. And there's a 50-50 chance he's not on this roster and or inactive if he is. So Raider fans are going to have their arms up, but I just don't see where he fits in this defense right now.
When they now the Raiders brought back, you mentioned Derek Carey, you mentioned Jonathan Hankins, David Irving, Nick Morrow. They also brought back Theo Riddick and Dallin Leavitt.
Those are league minimum guys that are camp bodies. I think Riddick has a chance to make the team. It'll be at the expense of Jalen Richard just because you're paying him a third of what you're paying Richard. I don't think Dallin Leavitt makes this team.
Now, Nathan Peterman, I know that there's still talks with Marcus Mariota whether he's going to restructure or he's going to get cut, but Nathan Peterman, what is it about Nathan Peterman that John Gruden sees that no one else sees?
I think he reminds him a little bit, I want to say, of Jeff Garcia, just kind of a guy that can move around. He's athletic. He gives you something with his feet. You can move him around. He's a little bit different from Derek, and where Derek's more of a pure pocket passer. John Gruden's always had that kind of guy, whether it was Bruce Gradkowski, Rich Gannon, Marcus Tuiasosopo, and the list goes on. Guys that were athletic and can move around, not big guys. And Peterman's young. He obviously loved him coming out of the draft. There's just something that there's a connection between those two guys that's hard to explain, and it looks like Mariota's going to get released if he doesn't restructure, and then Nathan Peterman's probably the backup on the team. And if he's taking any sort of meaningful snaps, the season's over for the Raiders. So we'll see. I don't know. I don't know why they paid him. I don't know what it is off the top of my head. I want to say it was $1 million guaranteed up to like $2.5 million. I don't think there's a team out there that was going to sign him. So you could have just got him on a league minimum deal. I have no idea why they guaranteed $1 million. He will be on the roster because of that. I don't know why you just didn't give him, like I said. You know, here's $990,000 with $50,000 guaranteed. Like, and there's no reason why they did what they did.
And they signed, last year they brought in Tack McKinley to, you know, they paid him to practice, basically. Now he's gone. So it's not so much.
Yeah, he got $4 million. It's not like he went out there and got a long-term deal where they just didn't want to pay it.
Exactly. It's not so much that they being the Raiders, they blow the big deals, it's the smaller head scratching. Like, why? Like, guy didn't play. It didn't work. And yet, they're okay with just shelling out, like you said, money to Nathan Peterman. that no one else would have signed, and just or no one else would have signed them for. There's a
you can add Nevin Lawson to that group as well.
Seriously, why is this guy back? I
haven't seen the numbers. I heard it's $1.9 million. So, I mean, if they're paying him $2 million to be the fourth corner, he doesn't really give you – he's below average outside. He doesn't make plays on the ball, and he's not very good inside. Again, if he's a camp body for league minimum, great, but it appears like they gave him close to $2 million, which I don't understand.
Signed a one-year contract worth $1.9 million. Received $950,000 in guarantees, including a $200,000 signing bonus.
That makes no sense to me.
It's mind-boggling. Like, why do this? It doesn't make any sort of sense where he actually made his base salary last year was $1,062,500. How does somebody directly get a raise for no production? None.
Zay Jones got one.
This is fair. I mean, this.
He got $2.5 million, and I don't think anyone was signing him either. So, Gruden obviously likes those guys. It's familiarity. They get it. There's something about him the coaching staff likes. I don't have a problem with Zay Jones being back on the roster. I do at $2.5 million. Like, he's not really. He doesn't give you any special teams ability either. So that. It's hard to carry a fourth or fifth wide receiver who doesn't play special teams, which is what the Raiders are going to do. So,
Nevin Lawson has played in 68. He has played in 88 games, 68 starts, right? If you look at football reference and you look at defensive, there's a gap. There's games, defensive interceptions, fumbles, and tackles, right? The top header, there is a whole bunch of zeros from games to fumbles. The only category that he starts to register in outside of game started is passes defense, where he has 34 in his career. How do you play almost 90 games and not have a single interception? He literally is Jason Tyner for those who follow baseball.
It's interesting because he's not the type of corner that excels in a Gus Bradley system. He's not a big guy with length that can play in a cover one or cover three defense, and he doesn't offer you anything in the slot. So that one's mind-boggling because I would assume Isaiah Johnson right now is the third outside corner. So in best-case scenario, he's the fourth corner on this team.
And we mentioned Morrow. Now, the Raiders do have a plethora of picks. They have picks back. They didn't have to forfeit a pick because of the COVID violations. Which do you think sounds like the more logical tack if you are the Raiders with their first four picks? Do you go safety, tackle, linebacker, interior, or do you go tackle, safety, cornerback, interior? Like, do you see them drafting a cornerback within the first four picks?
I think it's a possibility, for sure. If there's a guy that Gus Bradley likes, and he has a history of taking guys later in the draft that have produced Pro Bowls, I think you do. I think if you find a guy with ball skills and length that kind of fits in that kind of defense where you're just asking him to basically play a third of the field on the outside, you could. They need to get better at all three levels, and so far they've only gotten better on the defensive line. I would argue they might take a pass rusher as well. I could clearly, if there's a defensive tackle they like in the top three or four rounds, absolutely add him because every one of those guys they signed is on a one-year deal. A year from now, Irving's a free agent, Hurst is a free agent, Jefferson's a free agent, Hankins is a free agent. Like, so they need to start drafting to fill behind guys as well in addition to needs. But I at this point, they're locked in. It's a right tackle and free safety for the first two picks, which I'm not a big fan of locking yourself in because if a guy drops that's a good player, they're not going to take him. They're just going to grab for need. And that's the problem the Raiders have had. They've been grabbing for need for years. Where the good teams are drafting for a guy that's going to be a free agent a year from now that they're going to let walk and get a comp pick, and they're playing that game. That's the game the Raiders need to play, but they don't have the depth on the roster to do it yet, which is concerning because we're 4 years into this rebuild, and Gruden's had a ton of picks and spent a ton of money in free agency, and we're still trying to fill holes.
Do you think that Trevon Moehring out of Texas Christian, TCU, is worth that 17th pick?
Personally, no, I don't. I think that you're better off taking one of the tackles at that point. I had this conversation with someone the other day. They're like, well, the tackle draft is so deep. Take someone else to take a tackle in the second or third round. It's like, if I can get one of the two or three best guys in the draft at that position, why should I settle for the sixth or seventh? Like, give me the best guy. And I'm actually not for trading down. That's the other argument. We'll trade down and take one later in the first round. Why would I take the fifth or sixth best one if I can get the third best one? At this point, the Raiders need a guy that's going to come in and play and produce right away. And I think they're locked in on Tevin Jenkins. That's personally what I would do right now. But Moehring, for me, you hear a lot of people saying that he fits in this cover one system. He didn't play cover one or cover three in college. They played too high. So they're projecting based on the athlete and the speed, but he's never really done it. So I think it's kind of, there's some projection in that, and he might have some struggles early in his career. I would much rather, I feel safer with Richie Grant at this point in this type of defense than I would with Trevon Moehring.
I agree. I think that somebody like Richie Grant out of Central Florida or Andre Sisco out of Syracuse would be available later on. You know, it's one of those where they need a tackle. They need a right tackle in the worst way. They can't bring back, they can't bring a veteran in to be a one-year stopgap. There's a glaring need. This draft is way too deep for them to mess this up. And that is a fear, as of someone who watched the Raiders draft Jahad Ward one slot ahead of Derrick Henry, there's that gut feeling that you're going to mess this up, and I don't want them to mess this up. Now, go ahead.
I was going to say, I think logically the Raiders have looked at this, and who knows, but they see the depth there, and that's probably why they moved on from as much of the offensive line as they have, because they know they could get similar production with younger guys on better contracts. The optimist in me says that, but based on what this regime has done the last 4 years, I don't know if that's true or not, but I'm just hoping it is. That Cable's identified. Now, what we don't need is Tom Cable to be like, hey, I like this guy in the sixth round from Podunk stage when I'm converting from this position to that position. Let's take him as our starting right tackle. The Raiders will be in trouble if they start doing what the Seahawks did under the tenure of Tom Cable.
Was that George Fant?
He took Fant. J.R. Sweezy, he switched over from defensive tackle to offensive line. They didn't invest a lot of top picks during his time in Seattle, whether that was the front office not wanting to do it, or if it was him saying, just give me a guy later in the draft and I can make him into a quality player. But that never really materialized.
No, it never worked out for them. One of the things I think, and this is a gut feeling, it's not based on any sources, I have none, it's not based on anything, but if a guy like Shane Bouchel is late in the draft, John Gruden would be smart, so smart, if he's there like the seventh round, it screams Rich Gannon as far as like not mental game, but physical, like same physical makeup, like that type of approach to how they are athletically. It'd be perfect. It'd be a perfect fit. And it would give Gruden a chance to finally develop a young quarterback. But
I think Gruden has his eyes on the Texas quarterback, Sam Erlinger, I think is how you say his name.
Yep.
I think it would not surprise me if one of those third-round picks or fourth-round pick turned out to be him. You know, physical guy with some running skills. If it's okay passing the ball, obviously he's not an elite pocket passer, but just a guy with toughness that can move around, that's physical, that's willing to give up his body. I could definitely see that being a Gruden pick.
I can see that. That makes sense, too. It's funny that Shane Bouchel was actually the start at Texas, and he got supplanted by Sam Erlinger.
Yep.
And for those who are longtime fans of baseball and who are old, Shane Bouchel's dad, Steve, played third base for the Texas Rangers.
And he had a quality mullet while he was doing it.
He had an outstanding mullet. It wasn't quite Dean Palmer, like, at the plate, but Steve Bouchel had a outstanding mullet. If people want to interact with you on social media, how would they?
They can reach out to me on Twitter. The handle is at rholm22. It's R-H-O-L-M-22. Shoot me a message. Then I'm willing to answer any questions anyone has about the draft or free agency or fits or things like that.
One of the best out there, Ryan Holmes. Thank you so much for joining us on this episode of the Full Press Raiders podcast.
Thank you.
This has been another episode of the Full Press Raiders podcast. Be good to yourselves. Be good to each other.